And now for the first message this afternoon, we'll hear from an individual who was responsible for the Canadian work for many, many years, and now recently transferred to the Australian work, Mr. Dean.
Well, good afternoon to sunny Southern California. This world is a world of change. I didn't know for sure if I was going to be giving a sermonette or not. I'm not used to sermonettes, you know. I'm one of these long-winded type people that takes a lot of time. And I meant to check with Mr. Meredith before I came out on this sermonette business. There are changes occasionally here at headquarters. And I was going to ask him, you know, how long a sermonette was supposed to be. My sermonettes are usually an hour and 12 minutes. So I really don't know if Mr. Meredith would agree with that, but I'll try to cut it a little. No, all kidding aside, it is really fine to be back in California. I'm the type of individual that likes to conform in many ways. There is a saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. And here in Southern California, one thing I've noticed since I got back is everyone is coughing. And so if I cough during the sermonette, you'll just know what the situation is. Truth of the matter is, the Australians have been cheering. I haven't really been able to talk for almost 2 months. It's been a blessing for the Burleigh Church. But lest I use up my hour and 12 minutes in just side talk, I did want to talk to you this morning or this afternoon very briefly on a favorite subject of mine. And I know that maybe you're anticipating certain individuals talking about the work and the situation that's going on here at headquarters. I'm going to leave that to the individuals involved. And I'm going to deal basically this afternoon with one of my favorite topics. And of course, that is the work that God is doing on a worldwide basis. I'm not going to try to cover it on a worldwide basis. I'm going to talk about the Australian work and the Asian work in 1978, some of the plans we have for 1979. And I'll try to get through them as rapidly as possible. But actually, many things have been going on in Australia and in Asia. We try to keep you informed through the worldwide news and various other media, and I think we've had a couple emissaries here this past year on sabbatical, Graham Marshall and John Halford. And, of course, Asia is John Halford's favorite subject. You can hardly shut him up on it once you get him started, and he's has his heart very much in it. But this year in Australia and Asia has been a very busy year, and in many ways a very difficult year. I'll say this, I was quite tired when I began this trip. I went up to my youngest son's wedding in Vancouver on December the 24th and came down here for a couple of weeks' holiday to rest and relax. It hasn't quite turned out that way. But I was a little tired when I got here, and we'd had a very busy year in Australia and in Asia, and as God's work goes along, it doesn't go along easy. It's been a difficult year in many ways. There have been adversaries, there have been problems and difficulties with the media, television, radio, newspapers. I think on one morning I had as high as a dozen telephone calls come across my desk. And I don't want to go into all the details about it, but I was rather shocked at the media a bit in Australia in the fact that we had about 15 people leave the church out of the Melbourne area, and they went to the media, and the media suddenly felt that that was a large split and a big division in the Church of God in Australia. And they wanted me to fly all the way to Melbourne to talk to them about this big split. And they said, aren't you going to come down here to straighten out this split? I said, well, I don't know what goes on in other churches, but we have over 700 people attending church in Melbourne. And over the past 3 months, there's been an increase of about 40 in attendance. And I don't know what your concept of a split is, but for 15 people to get up and walk out of a church of over 700, I don't consider it a split. And I said, that's why we have ministers. We have four ministers in that area. They're capable. They're qualified. And if you have any questions, you can go to them. I said, I'm scheduled to come to Melbourne in a few weeks, and I'm busy. I don't have time, and I'll come down there when my schedule calls for it. But they kept pestering, and personally, that was my attitude about it, because it just wasn't a split. There were difficulties, and I said, personally, I'm concerned about the people involved, but certainly was no split. But it was a difficult year, but a good year a really good year in the Australian and the Asian work, and I'm not going to dwell on the problems. Because in the office, in the Burley office, it's been a very busy year this year. Last year we sent out a subscription renewal, and it did reduce our Plain Truth mailing list, but we've been busy this year increasing that list and are planning next year for another increase. And I'll just give you an idea of what has happened as far as the mail is concerned. In 1978, we received just a little over 100,000 letters in the Burley office. This would be from Australia and Asia. And in 1979, it was 130,000. 130,000 letters. And I'll talk about 79 in just a few moments. So we did have a good increase. It was a busy office. And the office staff, frankly, I think is a very fine office staff. And I'm very pleased with them. And we have had a good increase in our mail. The income in Australia this year was up against a good year last year where we had about a 14% increase in income. And this year, the increase is down somewhat. I haven't gotten the final statistics, but as near as I can figure with the December report in, our increase for this particular year will be somewhere in the neighborhood of 4% in increase in income. And so it was not as much as I would have hoped to have gotten. But as I've told the Australians and told the ministry in Australia, I'm the kind of guy that's never satisfied. If we had 30% increase, I'd wonder why it wasn't 35. If we had 50, I'd wonder why it wasn't 100. So I'm just the kind of man that's not satisfied. I like to see the work progress and grow, and it has done that in the Australian work. In our churches in Australia, we now have 48 churches with 7 outlying Bible studies. In January of 1978, or 77, we had 33 churches. So we've increased in the last 2 years by 15 churches and 7 outlying Bible studies. Our church attendance, including the Bible studies in Australia now, is around 4,700. The regular church attendance is 4,450, somewhere in that area, which is about an 8 to 10%, somewhere in that area, increase over the previous year. So as far as I'm concerned, that is good, substantial growth. I would appreciate more, and we're already laying plans and hoping that God will grant us a little more increase for the year of 1979. I'll be talking about that in a minute. I think for practical purposes, the most exciting area, at least my own mind, was Asia. Because I'd always heard, and before I was transferred to that area, that Asia was somewhat of a bottomless pit and that we would have difficulties in the work in Asia. But I found Asian work very exciting, very interesting, very challenging, and very workable, frankly. Very workable. And this past year has been a year in the Asian work of, as far as I'm concerned, an organizational year. And what I mean by organizational is this. I feel, in dealing with the Asian work, that the only way that we'll ever do a substantial work in Asia, the only way we'll ever be able to afford it is if the Asians pay for it themselves. And frankly, I'm beginning to find out that that will work. We've had our ups and downs with the mailing list, and I guess India is the most famous, of going to over 80,000. We took over the Indian mailing list. It was at 500. We're doing very little advertising. In fact, we only ran one ad in Asia. That was sufficient. And the mailing list is growing just about the speed that we want to in Asia, about the speed that the Australian work can afford. We're spending about $200,000 a year in Asia out of the Australian budget. And it's increasing this past 12 months by about 1,500 to the mailing list per month. And when you consider the population in Asia, that's a very reasonable increase, and of course is within our budget. But we started out this year in a foundational type building thing, as far as I'm concerned. I wanted to get the church registered to open up bank accounts and to have a post office box in the various countries. Because I realized that the brethren are the church. And the Asians are as anxious about this work as you are here at headquarters or anywhere else in the world. They want to be self-supporting. They want the work to grow. They want the work to progress. And through the process of this last year in India, the church is now registered. We have a bank account. Mr. Kulasingham is the elder there, and we'll be here for the conference. And I wish I had the time to talk about the ministry. And maybe if I have a sermon later on, I'll give a sermon on the ministry on a worldwide basis. Because to me, it's exciting, And I think there's some very valid things that I might have to say on the subject. But India has come along dramatically since we have opened the bank account. They have nearly 100,000 rupees in the bank in India. Now, you think that sounds like a lot of money. Well, it's not a lot. It's the exchange is about 8-1. But now in India, they have enough finances for their total internal expenses. For their churches, their Bible studies. We now have one church and three Bible studies in India. Mr. Kulasingham is an excellent minister, doing a very fine job. And if it were possible, and we're going to have to be checking into it, the Indian work could even now begin to pay for some of its own plain truth and its own literature. And to me, that is great. That's tremendous. That's what we're working toward as far as the Australian office is concerned. To have the work in India totally self-supporting. The mailing list is up to about 8,000 in India now, growing at about 500 a month. Their income is just leaping ahead because the Indians, of course, are very excited about having churches and Bible studies and ministers and the work growing in India. And so if we can work out with the government some means for transferring funds, the Indian work will begin to pay for at least part of their own plain truth and their own literature. And I feel, given a couple of years, they will be totally self-supporting if we can keep it within the general guidelines. Over in Sri Lanka, which is used to be Ceylon, we have a minister there now by the name of Mohan Jayaseka. And he's a very fine minister, has his own job, but is taking care of the work there. The church is registered there. We have a bank account. We have a post office box. And it's basically the same story. They're totally self-supporting insofar as handling the feast, as far as handling their own assistance to those in need in the church, and as well as handling all internal expenses. And again, when we get it worked out and get the operation there, I assume that Sri Lanka will also be able to handle its own expenses for its mailing list and for the literature. We go on over to Burma. The church is very firmly established in Burma. Mr. Soleil Bay is doing an excellent job. We now have one church and three outlying Bible studies in Burma. We have a deacon in an area called the Chin Hills by the name of Mr. Herbert Zimhai, who frankly could be ordained an elder at almost any time. He's certainly doing the job with three Bible studies that he's handling in the Chin Hills. And the Burmese brethren are just coming on like gangbusters, doing an excellent job. And frankly, God has really blessed those Burmese brethren in the last couple of years. They have had excellent crops, and this year is going to be one of the best crops they have had. And of course, their crops are their money. And there is their food in Burma. And so, as far as I'm concerned, Burma is a very stable, small, but growing work. Then we go on down to Malaysia, and I think Malaysia is even more exciting because we have a mailing list of almost 10,000 there. I was in Kuala Lumpur a few months ago for a church service. We had 90 in attendance. They had 230 for the Feast of Tabernacles. And we have now one outlying Bible study and are planning at least two more outlying Bible studies in Malaysia. And we received in the Burley office this month, when we needed it for our cash flow purposes, a check for $6,500, bringing the Malaysian and Singapore work up to total date, totally paying for their own literature, postage, plain truth, and everything. The Malaysian work and the Singapore work is totally self-supporting. The Australian work is not having to put out any money for either of those countries. And they carry the biggest mailing list of anywhere in Asia. And basically, as far as I'm concerned, it's because they have churches and because they have ministers. And of course, that's true in Singapore. We've now opened a bank account in Singapore, have a post office box number there. We have church of about 50, and it is totally self-supporting. And to me, that's exciting and interesting, because it's like I've explained to the people in Asia. I says, we'll never back out. If you're no financial burden, there'll never be a financial reason why the work should be cut in your own country. And I told them, you are responsible for Asia, not Australia. God has called you into the church. You are the church of God in Asia. So therefore, you are responsible for it. And they really liked that, frankly. They were excited about it and very, very anxious to do their part in this work. And they are doing a superb job. We're going to have three of those ministers over here for the conference. And if you get the chance next Sabbath or the following Sabbath when they're here, I would like for you to meet our Chinese minister, our Indian minister, and our Ceylonese or Sri Lankan minister. All very fine ministers, excellent men, and doing a tremendous job. They're not only pastoring churches, but in a real sense, They are the men that God has called to be responsible for the works in their entire country. So they have quite a responsibility on their shoulders. And what they don't realize is how big that responsibility can get. And I'm speaking from experience. I went into a work where there was 38 people in a church with a small income. And when I left in Canada, the income was over $6 million, and we were looking at somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 people, and had a smaller population than India, Sri Lanka, Burma, Malaysia. It had much smaller population than any of those countries. And so these men don't really realize what the potential is if God allows the time and the responsibility they are assuming. I'm hoping that we can continue to educate them and help them to come along. And somewhere along the line, they'll realize what they've gotten a hold of. I frankly don't think it's good for them to realize what the potential is. If I had realized what the potential was in Canada, I'd have been scared to death. But I was too dumb to realize, which is a blessing in disguise. And so the work in those areas is coming along fine. We've also set down our plans for 1979. And for the Australians in the audience, we've picked a target. Milwin's our advertising agent. Wanted to know what our goal was for 1979. So we thought we'd pick some nice round number, you know, something easy to attain. The highest the Australian Plain Truth mailing list has ever been is 64,000. It is now at about 40,000 because of a subscription renewal. So we told Milwins what the budget was, and we said we wanted the mailing list to go over 100,000 by the end of the year. And, you know, they were really excited about it. They said, give us a month to study what has happened in the Australian work in the last 15 or 16 years, and we'll come back with some ideas. So just before I left, they come back with the ideas. Very fine ideas. And so the target is 100,000. I'm a little skeptic about them being able to do it, so I'm trying to mobilize the entirety of the church, as well as the ministry, to help them, to give them a little nudge, you know, and to help increase that mailing list. So I assume and I hope very much that we will be able to run that mailing list over 100,000. I asked the ministers to submit a report to me on the new churches, Bible studies that were going to be needed in Australia, and what they anticipated from their areas for growth for 1979. The final analysis was on my desk just before I left. We're projecting at least 5 new churches in Australia for 1979, which would bring us up to 53, and about 12 new outlying Bible studies. And with what the ministers projected, we will probably have a church attendance by the end of 1979 of somewhere around 5,300 to 5,500. In other words, anticipating another 8, 9, or 10% growth insofar as the Australian churches are concerned. The brethren are excited about it. The ministers are excited about it. And as far as I can see, it should come off. We should have that particular growth as far as the Australian churches are concerned. As far as Asia is concerned, we're planning 4 new areas that we hope to open up Bible studies and to begin to establish a foundation in. It's just going to be the beginning for these areas. First one is already beginning. That's Hong Kong. And we hope that we'll be able to have a regular church. We do have a Bible study there now every other month. And so that one has already begun. But we also hope to open up a Bible study, at least on a bi-monthly basis, in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea, and also in Jakarta in Indonesia, and Honiara in the Solomon Islands. We already have a nucleus of members in those areas, and we're hoping that through some plain truth lectures or just plain Bible studies, that we can encourage the mailing list to become involved and increase those to the point where we feel it is feasible to go there about every other month or maybe even once a month, and have regular Bible studies in those areas, and to begin to work with those areas and develop those areas the same as these other areas have opened up in Asia. So as far as the work is concerned in Asia and Australia, I'm very excited about it. I think that it's positive. I'm not saying that everything is easy, that we don't have our difficulties. We do have our difficulties. Satan is the adversary of God's church in Asia, the same, or in Australia, the same as he is in the United States. All we're striving to do is not let Satan thwart the progress of the work in Asia and Australia. And so far, God has blessed the work. And I feel that if we stay united together in our efforts over there and work hard, that he's going to gain in some areas, but God is going to bless it in others. And you're going to hear when I come around next year that the Australian and the Asian work, again, has progressed very well. And it is going to come through difficulty. But as far as I'm concerned, that anything that is worth having is something you've really had to work for and really had to strive for, you'll really appreciate it when it comes that way.
For some special announcements and to introduce the special music and the main speaker, Mr. Ellis LaRavia.
Well, good afternoon again to all of you. You know, there are Sabbath days and then there are Sabbath days. And this is a Sabbath day that I think I have looked forward to more than any other Sabbath day in the history of my life, that as long as I've known there's a Sabbath. In one way, I would prefer, I think, to be home sleeping and kind of catching up on a little rest, because I really have not slept since last Sunday. But then it's very important, I think, for all of us to be here, and I'm happy to be here with you. Well, for the last 3 days, it's been very nightmarish. There's been a lot of confusion, a lot of turmoil, and a lot of misunderstanding, and it's created a great deal of distress for this headquarters church area and, of course, around the world. Now, we tried to clarify some of the things yesterday and where we're going and what the problems were and how we hope to resolve them, and I don't want to rehash a lot of those things now, but our concern has to be now for the welfare of the church, God's people, around the world, and for the conduct of this work. I'd like to go over with you briefly where we are in terms of the court hearing that ended last evening. Now, for those of you who were there, it did start somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 o'clock and did run until about or approximately 8:40 in the evening. So it was a very lengthy session. It was very hot and stuffy. I think we must have had, I don't know, must have been 500-600 people there, maybe more, at least that many. And it was very reassuring, very encouraging, I think. And I think the judge was moved, and he even made, in his final comments, he even made one comment that was directed toward those who were in the gallery. And so I think he was himself even very impressed. But there are several points that I would like to bring out that he stated as far as where we are in terms of the receivership that came upon the church around 8:40 on Wednesday morning. The judge stated that there has been no ruling or confirmation of any misconduct in the church by anyone, by any defendant that is named. He said the next hearing on Wednesday that any facts will be presented, and if any exist, and these will be presented, and then a judgment will be made accordingly. This is this coming Wednesday, the 10th. There is also an order to permit the Attorney General to investigate. And, of course, I think that most of you understand that the Attorney General does have the stewardship of charitable funds, and that is certainly the right of the Attorney General, the state. And, of course, we have never resisted that particular thing directly. Now, it has worked out that way in the sense that we were resisting the receivership. So it did work to that end as far as the records were concerned, but that was not our concern. It was never our concern to bar the auditors from the records or whomever from the Attorney General's office needed to see those records. That was never our intent. Also, another point, the control of the church and its entire organization and its assets are back with the church. Again, I think that's very important. Because under the terms of the receivership, or at least the way they were conducting themselves under that receivership, we had no rights to anything. The appointed receiver was totally and completely in charge of everything. And that was stated, so that is not conjecture. Another point, the receiver has no right, at least now under the terms, to hire, nor fire, nor right to interfere with regular conduct of business. So our business can go on as it has been, at least until it was interrupted on Wednesday morning, and we can go on with our normal course of business, paying our bills, receiving income, depositing those funds in the bank, writing checks upon those funds, and printing the gospel, radio and television time, purchase of it, the payment of those of that time, and all of the other things that are in the normal, and of course employees' checks, which all who are employees are most interested in, of course. No, I don't mean that. We have to have that, of course, but we are interested in that. Another point, all records which previously were removed by plaintiff's attorney or the attorney general must be returned forthwith. Because then that brings everybody back to square one, where everyone has access to whatever records are available, and where no one has any advantage in that respect. Point six, and probably one of the more important ones, which undergirds and is an umbrella over all of these others, the church is back in control of Mr. Herbert Armstrong. Now, he never relinquished it, but believe me, brethren, they considered it, and by they, I mean the attorney's plaintiffs and the receiver, the ex-Judge Weissman, did definitely consider. Because I was there when they walked in, well, not when they walked into the building, I walked into the building, they were already there. And they summarily told me, and in fact, one of the first things they hit me with was, Mr. Herbert Armstrong is removed from his position in this organization. Now, that's what they told me, unequivocally. And I lie not, and I would state that under oath, if need be, or affirm it, or whatever. But that is what they said, and that was reaffirmed even at a later time. And the attorney pointing to Judge Weissman, or ex-Judge Weissman, said, he is now in charge of everything. So, for whatever you have heard, the best of my recollection, that is the way it was. Now, I could relate many, many other things to you, but the important thing is, I think, at this particular time, is that we understand where we are now, and we feel like we are in a very good position now, because the main thing was, we did not want to see, and of course, Mr. Herbert Armstrong did not want to see, himself removed as the apostle of this church, because God placed him there, and he knows that, and we know that. And for whatever else was said, that really was the way it was. Because you cannot separate the physical activities of this work from the ecclesiastical or the spiritual, or the spiritual, as we more often refer to it. Another point, the receiver will only be collecting data from our records and documents. And the only reason the receiver will be here at this point in time is to make certain and to be sure that this is allowed, this is permitted. So they will only be collecting data from our records and documents. And the final point here, we, the church, were always willing to open our records, and we believe our records will vindicate us. Mr. Herbert Armstrong has said that, and we have no reason to believe otherwise. If something is presented to the contrary, Mr. Armstrong has said that he will, of course, do whatever is required to remedy the situation. So we can be content with that. I think we can rely upon that. We can depend upon that. So the hearing, I think, was very essential. It was very essential to clarify the authority in this organization, because that was what was at stake. Because whether we realize it or not, or whether we understand it or not, we had to preserve our rights as a church, and that meant to preserve the rights of the individual who is the head of this church that God has appointed. And this other individual was in charge, indeed. And theoretically, he could have been permanently in charge. Now, I'm not saying that would have happened, but he could have been in charge as long as the court action or the state allowed him to be in charge. Now, that could have been weeks or days or months or years or whatever. I mean, sure, that's theoretical. I understand that. But could it happen, or should it happen, for 1 minute? No, it shouldn't, or 1 hour, or 1 day, or whatever. That was what was at stake. And it was a classic church versus state situation. Well, I think that it's very important that we had this, and now we are clarified, and now we can go forth with the regular conduct of our activities, thankfully. Now, of course, there no doubt will be some impediments where we have records. We're going to have to work around the auditors and people who are combing through these and filtering through them. That's true. But at least we're in our normal conduct or routine of business, and that's going to be good. So I hope all of you can rejoice in that. I just wanted to mention a few other things here before Dr. Meredith comes up. I have noticed in myself, and of course I think, as I've mentioned before to many others, if I notice something in myself, I have a tendency to believe that probably it could be a problem with others. Once in a while I notice something fairly decent in myself, but that's not very often. Maybe you do too, but more often than not, I notice something that I'm not too happy with. But I think in this society, and of course, I think what we see is prevalent in this society, we see rise to the surface to one degree or another with us, because we are influenced, or at least we are influenced, or to the degree to which we allow ourselves to be influenced. It can happen. It can occur. But the judgmental spirit that is in this society about everything and anything, I really am concerned about it. I'll give you just one little kind of a humorous sidelight or an example. But I remember on New Year's Eve, and I was up all night there for another reason. It didn't have anything to do with this court hearing or our situation with the Attorney General. But my eldest son, who is 16, had come to me earlier, and he wanted to stay up all night, too. Well, I told him, well, I didn't think that was necessary, or too good an idea, but at 16, I said, I can appreciate why you would want to. But we did have some guests coming in, and I told him, at least I would like you, though, to stay up until they arrive. Now, they were due to arrive about 2 a.m. I don't think they really, or in reality, arrived till about 4 a.m. Well, he gave up on them before then because it, you know, by the time 4 a.m. comes, my 15-year-old daughter got wind that he was going to stay up all night. I was authorized to stay up all night. Well, there was a little misunderstanding there. And then this conversation was overheard by an aunt or my wife's sister who was here, and she didn't think it was fair because my daughter couldn't stay up all night. My wife said, no, you have to be to bed by 1. And so she couldn't stay up all night, and so my wife's sister said, that's not fair. Well, they're about the same age, and why shouldn't she be able to stay up all night? Well, obviously, all the facts weren't known. And if they had been known, she may have still thought it was unfair. I don't know. I doubt it. You know, I think once all the facts are known, at least I have come to see that, then usually, normally, both will see, or every party that's involved in it will see, well, yes, that was logical, that was reasonable. We just didn't understand all of it. But the problem is, I think all too often, is we make judgments. I'll say I make judgments about situations that I don't have all the facts. Maybe just one other little brief example here. Had to do with this WAIF group that we do an annual TV special with. And the lady who was the president of WAIF that year, whom I didn't know at the time, but had been dealing with us about tickets for, and they use them for the conduct of their children's activities. Well, I had heard on many occasions, and I won't relate who was relating this to me because that's not needful anyway, but they were relating to me that, a couple of people were relating to me that they were really having a problem with this lady. She was hard to get along with, difficult to deal with. She'd say one thing one time and another thing another time, and it was just a constant thing, and these things, you know, were kept fed to me. Okay, obviously, I'd only heard one little side of the story. Well, after hearing this so many times, I went down to the foundation office one day, and there was an individual on the phone there, and I just kind of casually or humorously said, oh, that must be the lady on the phone that you've been having all the problem with. Just an off-the-cuff comment. Well, I noticed that there was a lady sitting there in the office that I hadn't seen before, and immediately I thought, oh, no, it couldn't be. Well, sure enough, it was. And he introduced me to her, and, well, you know the embarrassment and the chagrin. Well, I kind of passed it off because I was so embarrassed to say much of anything else. But later, she had to come to me, with managing the auditorium here, she had to come to me on another thing. And when I saw her coming, I said, let me say one thing first before you say anything or before we get started about business. I said, I have to apologize about what I said in the office. I said, I made a judgment, I said something, and though it was half-hearted or casual or humorous, I didn't really intend anything by it, it hurt. And I made it not knowing what the facts were. I had never met you, I had never seen you in my life. All I knew was little casual comments that were made by some other individuals. And I said, I have to apologize for making a judgment on that fact, or on that basis, rather, not with the facts. Well, she was a little reluctant to accept my apology, but she did, and we grew to be pretty good friends, probably developing a better relationship than we ever would have, frankly, because God's way does work. Now, you know, a lot of times we don't think it will, but it does. God's way just does work. But, you know, those are two occasions, and they're kind of light occasions, I guess, in one sense, but they're dealing with human relationships, and that's what we're all dealing with. But we all make judgments based on something other than fact. Too often, we're very judgmental. But how can we judge God's work? And I've done that too. We've made judgments in God's work based on maybe rumor, maybe just a passing comment, someone's opinion, someone's idea, or whatever. Usually, though, not on fact. Because when we've known the facts, I think inevitably we have all seen, well, yes, that's probably a good decision. Or if we even didn't know, or when we knew all the facts, we at least came to the conclusion, well, maybe I wouldn't have done it that way, but that's fine. That's fine, no problem. But I think we do all too often, and I think we have to be very careful in that regard. You know, the classic example, of course, is in the Bible where Judas was making judgments, and based upon what he saw as facts. Now, he was with Christ, obviously. Christ taught him. He instructed him, just like the other 11 disciples. But God had given Christ a commission to do. Judas wasn't happy with that. He just wasn't happy with it. And we know what his end was. But he wanted it the way he wanted it. And he was very judgmental. And I think all of us have to come to the realization that we're all not alike, even in that respect, where we know all the facts. We still probably wouldn't all make the same decision regarding anything with regard to the work. And after all, the commission. What about the commission? Only God can come up with that, in my opinion. But, you know, he gives a very broad commission, right? Now, somebody's got to fill in those details, humanly speaking, because somebody's got to make decisions. But on the other hand, we do look for God's inspiration in it, because it's God's commission. God says, here's the broad commission, and I fill you in with it as you go along, as you seek my solution to it. Now, if we don't seek the solution to it, then sure, we can go awry, and I think all of us, in one way or another, have done that from time to time. But who can determine what that commission is, except God has determined the broad commission, and as we go along, God must inspire for how that is fulfilled. How many nations do you go to? How often do you visit those nations? How many radio or TV programs do you have? You know, those are all things that are very subjective. It's just like God's calling. Who can determine how God calls someone? I have never been able to put together a set of standards by which God called anyone. Now, if you have a set of standards by which you can determine that, I wish you'd let me know. I just for the sake of interest. Not that I could do anything about it. I couldn't call anyone one way or the other if I knew what the standards were. And I don't think you could either. But just look, you know, at all of us sitting here and in the balcony. And, of course, this is piped into the Imperial Gym, and welcome to all of you, by the way, over there, and even the Student Center if we had an overflow there. But all I'm getting at is God has determined the standards by which he calls people. And I don't know what those are, except he says he does it. And he draws us to him by the Spirit of God. That's how we're drawn. But on what basis, what standard? Boy, like I say, if you can put it all together, you're better than I am, because I'm not able to put it together, except there is one thing that I have determined. We're all human in here, I think, unless some of you are angels unawares. But, you know, we all have to be human for God to call us. Other than that, well, you have to be male and female, I guess you could say. But still, when you get beyond that, there's not much you can say about what God's standards are. You know, it's just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There was a very important decision made in their lives. They determined with all of their being that they were going to rely upon God as far as their salvation from that fiery furnace. Now, God did save them. But I think there's a lot more to it than just saving of their physical lives. I think God was demonstrating something by that as well. Now, they had to come to the commitment, obviously. Maybe they were inspired to come to that commitment in that situation. But there was a lot more to it, I think, than just their physical eyes. I think there was a testimony of the power of God. So I think it's very important that we realize, and I know we know this, I know that we know even in the opening prayer, God has appointed Mr. Armstrong. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that at all. God has appointed others, and I think we've all realized that this is the work of God and this is the church of God. But it does bother us, or you know, when it gets into the realm of activities or decisions that are made and all, when it gets into that realm, we do have opinions, but we ought to keep them in that realm, unless we are counseling or unless we are making that decision and are accountable for it. I think it's very important that we realize that and not to be judgmental in it, and to realize that maybe these aren't or always our responsibilities. But I think we have to believe that our present responsibilities and calling and our future is more important than any single decision that is ever made. The single decision is that we chose to go God's way. We chose to be a part of God's work. I know it was real interesting. You know, there are always bright spots, I think, in any trauma or any trial or any test that you go through. And in the last few days, I think the one bright spot was that during all of this turmoil and trauma, you know, we're going in the office, being called in by the receiver, the judge, sometimes with drawn guns, literally. And, you know, they were always making these demands for this or that or the other, and they wanted to see me, and I was to report immediately, and I would have to go and try to delay until we could get legal counsel. And, you know, it was just, you know, back and forth all the time. Well, we had Greg Gittler, who was an attorney who was assigned to kind of be a shadow to help me through the ordeal as far as the legal complications were concerned. And between sessions with these other people, I would sit down, and maybe it's the only way in one sense I was able to keep my sanity apart from God's help and God's spirit. But, you know, you have to be doing something, pacing the floor. You wear out the rug after a while, and you get, you know, pretty tired and worn out. But I had the opportunity to preach to him, or teach him, or whatever, from Lucifer all the way through the third resurrection. During that period of time. Now, he didn't agree with everything, but, you know, it was a very modifying factor for him as well. I mean, it was a stabilizing thing. And of course, he was Jewish, and I told him, well, I know you didn't recognize the first return of Christ, I mean the first coming of Christ, but the second coming of Christ you will, and you'll know that he came the first time. I was pretty frank with him. We got to be real good friends, and you do under those circumstances, believe me. I got to preach to him about the holy days, because I asked him, I said, do you keep all the holy days in the Old Testament? Oh, of course. I said, do you understand what they mean? Well, yeah, I think I do. I said, well, I'll tell you what they really mean. So we developed that kind of relationship. But anyhow, I think that there are some good things that come out of it. But I think that we have to realize where our strength is and our hope is, and we have an incredible future. I know that the book, The Incredible Human Potential, I hope all of you have read it, because I like to just refer back to it. Now, you know, it's not the Bible, but there's such a digest of pearls of wisdom and truth and hope of the future and everything that is contained in that. So be able to go back and just read it. It so magnifies the human mind with God's spirit to at least dwell upon something that is so tremendous and beautiful and wonderful, and that we're going to achieve. I mean, that is really incredible. But this is our opportunity, and I know that I need your prayers. I know that Mr. Herbert Armstrong does, as he has requested so many times, with Dr. Meredith. Every last minister in this church and in this work and every last member, we all need that. We all need to be praying and be concerned for one another. We need to help one another more than ever before and be concerned about one another and one another's welfare. We really do, and I hope all of you appreciate that. I've enjoyed being with you a little while this afternoon and spend this Sabbath day with you, and I really I've enjoyed it a great deal more than I would sleeping or resting, though I probably need that as well. One announcement here, I think. Plus, we found a billfold, or one was found in the theater, Raymond Woolley. So if come backstage afterwards, we'll have this for you. Just one announcement here. It says we would like to announce, this is from the Ambassador Cultural Alliance, we would like to announce that the location of our January 9th meeting has been changed to the Recital Hall located in the Fine Arts Building. Now for special music. Prior to hearing from Dr. Roderick Meredith, who will bring the sermon, we have Consider and Hear Me by Alfred Wooler, taken in part from Psalm 13. Will be sung by John Cossey and pianist Alan Andrews.
Let not mine enemies say, I have prevailed against him, prevailed against him. For my trust is in thy mercy, thy mercy and faithfulness, thy mercy and battle with strength unto the battle.